Prilosec, Lipitor, Allegra, Viagra, Lunesta. If you watch any TV at all, these names are certainly familiar to you. And it's no wonder, because according to the trade group Pharma, the group that represents the drug makers, drug companies spent over $4 billion on direct-to-consumer advertising in 2004. That's money spent on TV ads, magazine ads, things like that. The U.S. General Accounting Office said that spending on direct-to-consumer advertising of prescription drugs has tripled in recent years. If you don't believe us, just ask your doctor. There's no doubt that the ads work. We've all heard of the little purple pill, not to mention those green gremlins that live under your toenails. And doctors report that patients do indeed come into their offices asking for the meds they saw on TV. But is that a good thing? Well, it depends on whom you ask. Opponents of the ads say they drive up the cost of drugs, got to pay for all that advertising, create a conflict in the doctor's office where doctors are urged to write prescriptions that patients really don't need. Those in favor of the ads say they destigmatize disease and alert people to medical problems they might not otherwise know they have. Would you know that you had restless leg syndrome? I wouldn't know that if I didn't ask my doctor. And after all, isn't this whole prescription drug controversy really just a free speech issue? Don't drug companies have the right to say what they want in the media? Those are some of the issues we'll be talking about for the rest of the hour. And if you want to get in on the conversation, I invite you to give us a call at number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-8255. And it may sound like I need a doctor in a moment, but it's just the pollen in drug season, pollen season in the spring here in the East. Let me introduce my guests. John Camp is the executive director of the Coalition for Healthcare Communication, whose members are advertising agencies that work for drug companies. He joins us by phone from Washington. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Camp.
Thank you, Ira. I've been listening to your voice so long, like many other members of your audience, I feel like I know you as a brother.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'll have you pay some of my bills, my brother would. Richard Kravitz is a professor of internal medicine and the director of the Center for Health Services Research in Primary Care at the University of California, Davis. He joins us from the campus of UC Davis. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Kravitz.
Hi, it's great to be here.
You're welcome. Robert Santor is a professor of internal medicine at the University of Alabama School of Medicine in Birmingham. He joins us from WBHM in Birmingham. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Santor.
It's a pleasure to be here.
This is such a polarizing issue. Let me see if I can start in the middle with Richard Kravitz, because you sort of have split the difference about the pros and cons. Tell us what you think about having drug ads on TV.
Basically, drug ads have some benefits and they have some liabilities. And sound public policy really has to deal with that fact. On the one hand, the benefits of these drug ads are likely to be greatest when the conditions that are advertised are common and serious, and when the treatments are safe, highly effective, and underused. And there is a lot of underused care in the United States. There are a lot of medicines that people should be getting for some conditions that they're not getting. Mm-hmm. Whether those are the conditions and the medicines that are being advertised is highly debatable, and I'm sure some of your other guests will comment on that. But, on the other hand, when conditions are either uncommon or trivial and when the treatments have significant side effects, then drug advertising can bring with it more harm than good. And so I think we have to weigh the two sides carefully.
Let's go to one side. John Camp, give us your reasons why these ads on television are beneficial to the public.
Not every ad may be beneficial. But I do think that ads are valuable. Dr. Kravitz actually did a very good study that appeared in JAMA not long ago that demonstrated that if you were had symptoms of depression, major depression, and you talked to your doctor about them, and you raised the possibility of getting a drug, which is the standard of care for major depression, that you substantially increase the possibility that you would get a prescription.
Mm-hmm. Give us the other side, Robert Santor. You wrote an editorial in USA Today saying, take drug ads off the air.
I believe that. Let's take Rich's same study, the same study in JAMA. He had another group, and we're quoting Rich a lot right now, he had another group of subjects who went into doctors who did not have depression but said they were depressed, but if you asked them the right questions, they weren't depressed, and they were very likely to get prescriptions. The problem with direct-to-consumer advertising is it disrupts the doctor-patient relationship and takes up very valuable time in that communication, diverting over to issues that could be very costly and take away from the other things that you have time for in that interaction. So I'm really against it because I think it disrupts care more than it could possibly help care.
And I'd like to talk about that because I agree with him that many of the warnings, health warnings that are now in ads, disrupt the doctor-patient relationship. The Coalition for Healthcare Communication today asked the FDA actually to change their rules to develop rules on direct-to-consumer advertising that would increase the value of those consultations in that patients were having with their doctors by changing the kinds of warnings that are in ads.
In other words, when we see ads for whatever, it could be Vioxx, one of the other things that they're advertised to the public, there's a whole page. It's like the insert. The doctor's insert is right there on that magazine page. You're saying get rid of all that paperwork and all that verbiage.
I'm saying that the best thing that we can do is we can tell patients what patients ought to know and let doctors be doctors. You're exactly right. Those so-called brief summaries, and I think Bob Temple at one of the heads of policy at FDA said it best, it's like the Holy Roman Empire. It's neither brief nor a summary. But those summaries are designed for doctors, the kind of information that doctors need to know to make a prescribing decision. That's very different information from the kind of information that patients need to know in an ad so that they can think about whether or not this drug might be right for them, and then if so, maybe begin an investigation further and at some point talk to their doctors about it intelligently.
Bob Santor?
Well, every time I see at the end of one of these ads, please go talk to your doctor, I shudder. That's like the kiss of death to me because I know that there are a bunch of doctors out there who are going to be asked about a disease or symptom that the patient doesn't even have. The problem in medical care today is that you do have a limited time per patient visit, be it 15 minutes or 20 minutes or 25 minutes at the most. There are a lot of things we have to do. If you take 5 minutes away describing why you don't need the little purple pill, which is one that I really, really hate, then you can't talk about things that may be much more important. To think that an advertisement sets the agenda for the doctor-patient relationship rather than the doctor and patient is very disconcerting to me.
Richard, yes. Kravitz, any middle ground here?
Well, you know, as it happens, Ira, our study provides some evidence that requests by patients can drive higher quality care, but it looks like in our data that requests that were of a general variety, that is when our either depressed or non-depressed patients said they'd seen a television public service program on depression and that they wanted to discuss those issues with their physicians, they actually were more likely to receive appropriate care when they were depressed and less likely to receive marginally appropriate care or even inappropriate care when they weren't. So drug ads essentially are a really blunt instrument, and they have potential to achieve some good, but at a reasonably, you know, fairly high price. And so when we have a minute, and I'll go with your cue, I have sort of a three-stage proposal that I think could result in some really beneficial.
Go ahead. You can begin, and we have a couple of minutes. See how far we get.
Well, the three points are to, I call it, stop the bleeding, keep better records, and transform the system. So first, stop the bleeding. We saw what happened with the Vioxx situation, where promotion got way out ahead of the science on the effects and harms of the drug. And so Vioxx is an arthritis medicine that ended up having some pretty significant cardiovascular side effects. But that was only after a very effective promotional campaign had increased prescribing dramatically and resulted in millions of prescriptions. So we've got to have a moratorium on promotional activity for enough time to allow information, important information on adverse effects of drugs to come out. many members of the public do not know that that the you know, the drugs are approved as being safe and effective based usually on some very brief clinical trials that don't allow adequate time for especially uncommon side effects to emerge. So we need to stop the bleeding by putting a moratorium on drug ads for at least one, probably 2 years after a drug comes on the market. But that in itself won't be enough. We second have to keep good records. We need to collect systematic data on adverse effects of medications after they're released, and so that we can make decisions not only whether the drug should be promoted directly to the public, but also you know, whether it should be kept on the market at all. And finally, I think we need to transform the system and try to retain the very best parts of direct-to-consumer advertising, but in a way that maximizes the benefits and minimizes the harms. And what I would the plan that I would promote is for pharmaceutical companies to pay into a pool and to jointly develop public service commercials that would encourage patients with significant and undertreated conditions, for example, patients who might require beta blockers after heart attack, or patients who have hypertension, which we know is diagnosed and treated in only a minority of cases, that would encourage such patients to take evidence-based effective treatments, not necessarily with a focus on any particular brand, but on reducing levels of undertreatment for significant chronic conditions in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Sort of public service. Hang on there, because we have to take a break. And we'll get back and get reactions from everybody. We're going to, as I say, take a break and come back and talk more with John Camp, Richard Kravitz, Robert Center. Your calls about drug advertising, direct-to-consumer advertising, what do you think? Maybe you work for a doctor or you are a doctor and you have experience in your office about patients coming in. You have an opinion. Give us a call, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking about direct-to-consumer advertising and the kinds you see on mostly in the evening newscasts in the morning where old people like us are watching things suffering from all these illnesses that we didn't know we had. John Camp is Executive Director of the Coalition for Healthcare Communications. Richard Kravitz, Professor of Internal Medicine and Director of the Center for Health Services Research and Primary Care, UC Davis. Robert Center, Professor of Internal Medicine, University of Alabama School of Medicine in Birmingham. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Richard Kravitz had just outlined for us a three-point plan about how he sees about fixing the system a bit. And Dr. Center, is that you who was going to try to jump in there?
It was me. Rich said a lot of very stimulating things, and he has some good ideas, but I don't think his proposal is direct-to-consumer drug advertising. As soon as you start talking about the disease rather than the particular drug that just came on the market that has a much higher cost than the drug it's replacing, that's no longer the problem that we're talking about. I'm all in favor of public service announcements, more education of patients who've had a heart attack that they should be taking a beta blocker, but you're not going to hear any ads for beta blockers because they're all generic now. And that's the problem I have. These are about selling the latest, hottest, most expensive drug, even when we have a less expensive drug that works just as well, if not better.
Or you're not going to hear about acupressure, acupuncture, things like that that are not patentable.
Well, this is John Camp, and I want to respond to that a bit. I'm a diabetic. I'm on one of those new drugs that actually protects the beta cell function. I may not have known about it had I not been a very aggressive information seeker about my disease. I won't know about it from consumer advertising because the company doesn't advertise to consumers. I think that for us to essentially, and I think Robert is sort of moving to a position that we ought to just ban DTC, is one that's not appropriate. Let me respond to Dr. Kravitz, who raises an interesting question that's been floating around. Maybe we ought to have a moratorium on DTC at least the first year or two that a drug is approved. And I think that's an interesting idea, but I don't agree. I think about, now that we think about bird flu and there's all kinds of new drugs that may come out to treat bird flu. There's some new drugs that may be used to prevent cervical cancer. I think that we ought to make sure that when those drugs come out, that the public that needs to know about them knows about them as quickly as possible, and to have a ban on DTC would prevent that.
Well, so let's say bird flu did come out. You might see a drug that said, ask your doctor about Tamiflu, right? I mean, that's antiviral, and if bird flu has come to the States, maybe not even spreading from person to person, but just the news that this flu has arrived in the continental United States in birds. Might we see that, you know, or ask a doctor about Relenza or something else? What's wrong with that?
I don't think there is anything wrong with that. In fact, I refuse to buy into the dumb or vulnerable doctor idea that doctors are just the pawns of their patient, and if a patient asks about the drug, that the doctor will make a prescription that's inappropriate. My doctors wouldn't do that, and I don't think that the two doctors that are on the phone right now would do that.
Dr. Center?
Well, the great straw man argument. I like the way you set that up, that of course doctors aren't that dumb. And it's no one says doctors are dumb, but doctors often take the path of least resistance. And why? It's because they're under such time pressure. It's not a question of intelligence, but what is efficient in that day's schedule and the number of patients you have to see. So we do know that if you have heartburn and you go in and you don't request a drug, then you're going to get a less expensive drug than if you specifically request a drug by name. Now, has that helped the health of the patient?
Well,
I know of no.
Wait a minute. Dr. Kravitz's study demonstrated that if you ask for a specific drug, you're likely less likely to get that specific drug.
Depression is.
Make a general request for.
Well, what is the point of the advertising then? If you don't get the drug that's being advertised, what's the point of the advertising?
No. It's interesting. Actually, there are a couple things I need to clarify. First, our studies certainly show that if you ask for a specific drug, you were more likely to get that specific drug. You didn't necessarily get it, but you were more likely. It's when you made a general request for treatment for depression that you were more likely to get a more appropriate treatment overall. So that's the main point.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Chris in Colorado. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that I'm an ex-pharmaceutical representative. I worked for a major company for 5 years. And even though there is a lot of good within the pharmaceutical companies, I can tell you that the major reason why they're doing that, and it doesn't take, you know, much sense to know, is really the bottom line. It's the dollar. And yes, it educates the public, but that's the bottom line. And I always look at things is what's the ultimate purpose here? And really the ultimate purpose is, you know, money. And I just kind of wanted to make that comment to you guys and see what you guys thought about that.
All right, thank you very, very much. You've made my point exactly. It's all about selling your brand and making more profits for your company. Now, I'm a capitalist. I believe in trying to do the best you can for your company. But when it increases the cost to the public, and it could harm people. And the Vioxx example is the best example yet that will ever occur for direct-to-consumer advertising. Here was a drug that had a very narrow indication, which everybody ignored because the advertisements made it sound like it was a panacea. And look what happened.
You know, we'll talk about straw men. If the car companies routinely have car recalls based on all kinds of things, including brakes and other problems. But nobody suggests that because there are recalls of cars where people could be actually killed, or there are recalls of cars, that it's a that's an excuse or a reason to kill all car advertising. We're talking here about you're building a straw man so that you can burn it.
Well, I'm very intrigued by both sides of this argument, but I think we have to get very, very practical. And, in order to address issues of quality prescribing in the United States, we need to reduce inappropriate prescribing and increase appropriate or beneficial prescribing. One way to do that certainly is through public service educational campaigns, and they have been shown to be marginally effective at times. The problem is to be really effective, they need to be sustained. And to be really sustained, they need to have money. And and I guess it all comes back to that, because the source of money for promotion and for education, and one big source is the pharmaceutical industry. And one of the interesting things about my proposal is that it would, although it might initially be viewed skeptically by the industry, it could in fact not only benefit the public health but also benefit the industry bottom line. The only thing they'd be yielding some control, because there's some good research evidence that when you advertise in a market for a specific drug, many of the competing drugs in the same category also increase in sales. So advertising has sort of a non-specific effect on sales. And if you increase the levels of prescribing for undertreated conditions, some of those prescriptions are going to be for generic drugs that aren't going to benefit big pharma, but others are going to be for branded drugs, and the net effect on profits is not clear. And so I think if the pharmaceutical industry could be induced to participate in a public-private partnership, we could be much better off.
I obviously watch way too much TV, but the ads that I see on television unfortunately don't fit the categories that Rich is alluding to. They fit categories of that are all in the profit realm and not in the major undertreated disease realm. And
I agree.
So
with you.
I guess it's
give me,
possible.
Give me an example,
wait
Dr. Center.
You know, let's think about it.
Dr. Kemp, hang on, John Kemp, hang on. Let me get Dr. Center to clarify what I was going to say. Then you can react to it. Okay.
Okay. So let's take Cialis, please. Somebody take Cialis. Why is this on television constantly whenever I try to watch SportsCenter?
36 hours, Bob.
It's not. It was, but it's not anymore.
Well,
why was it taken off?
The pharma guides had the drug industry, as a matter of self-regulation, took the ED ads off of prime time as of January 1st.
It's not because we thought that thinking a drug makes you throw a football through a tire better, something like that. Okay. 1-800-999-8255. Let's go to Robin in Sacramento. Hi, Robin.
Okay. Hi. I hope we don't lose the connection. And I am so stained with you guys, I don't know where to start. I've been diabetic since I was a little kid, so I've been shooting insulin for 40 years. I was a patient at UAB Medical Center in the early 80s when a print ad for an insulin pump got my interest, and I asked my doctor at UAB, why haven't you told me about this? A few years later, after I moved to California and I became and am still now a patient at UC Davis, print ads for Humalog and Lantus, which for those who aren't in the diabetic community are insulin analogs produced by genetic engineering, which are respectively a rapid onset acting insulin analog and a long acting insulin analog with a true 24-hour activity period without the sharp peak that you get with NPH. And I had to again ask the endocrinologist, the professor of clinical endocrinology, who is my physician, and which means you can probably figure out who that person is, at UC Davis, can I use this? Can I get this? Is it approved? There's a print ad for it here in Parade Magazine.
Let me get
you told me about this.
And Dr. Kravitz, any reaction?
Right, I guess, I'm not sure I can defend our local healthcare system, but, this is an example where Robin is calling in about a highly prevalent, highly significant, and in many cases undertreated condition, and it's clear that in this individual case that these ads had some benefit and that they spurred her to have some fruitful discussions with her doctor and ended up presumably with a treatment that was effective for her.
And I'm a diabetic, and if you treat diabetes aggressively, you can avoid the very expensive treatments that come later, like having your feet cut off, like by going blind, having a heart attack.
I've got to say, though, I hate to interrupt, but if troglitazone had been advertised, this was a diabetic drug that showed a great deal of promise, but also happened to cause severe liver failure, we would have seen a lot more liver failure-related deaths in this country.
But you have type 2 and type 1 failures, and essentially what you were talking about there is, yes, there may have been some people who were harmed by them, but that does happen. But if we worry about a couple of people that may be harmed, and then we don't serve millions of others who may die or prematurely have side effects that we have to treat differently, that really isn't a net for the public health.
1-800-99-8255 is a number. We're talking about direct advertising to consumers, drugs this hour, and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Dr. Centaur, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, the question is whether the drug ads we see on television are likely to get at the clinical situation that was just discussed. We do need more public health ads about diabetes. We need much more education in this country because it's a tremendously costly, prevalent disease. But I don't see a lot of ads talking about the key factors in diabetes when I watch TV. I see ads for Procrit and Enbrel, drugs that are very much niche drugs and very, very expensive. But I don't see a discussion of, do you know what the key things are that your doctor should be doing for high-quality diabetes care? So I'm in favor of that kind of public service. I'm in favor of educating patients in a rational way about what's new. We should have articles about that in Parade magazine, in every newspaper, but not the drug ads that we currently have on TV.
1-800-989-8255. Steve in California. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a psychiatrist, actually a child psychiatrist, and a while back, the various medications started cropping up, Paxil CR and Zoloft and the like. And my problem with them is that the types of symptoms that they describe are oftentimes they're specific and yet vague, in that almost anybody could feel as though they might have this disorder. And they don't get diagnosed by a doctor, they're essentially diagnosing themselves. And then if they show up in their doctor's office, and if it's not a psychiatrist's office, then and they say, gee, I'm having such and such symptoms, and I believe that I need to be on whichever medication, and the doctor does not have the time to do a full psychiatric evaluation and says, gee, okay, let's go ahead and give you this medication and see how it works. And then the next thing that happens is the patient ends up either with side effects of one type or another or having some sort of a negative outcome, and those then become the things that get reported in the news and sensationalized. And my concern is that people end up believing that they have things that require specific medication treatments when they may not, or that the medication that is being advertised to help that particular person may in fact not be an appropriate medication for them, but the doctor who is strapped for time, especially a primary care physician where most of these people are going to go, ends up prescribing a medication not because they're dumb and not because they don't understand the situation, but because they're being presented with a list of symptoms and it seems as though it may be the right thing to do, but it ends up with a potentially negative effect. And, in my own practice, if somebody comes in saying, I saw such and such a medication and I think I want it, I'm actually much less likely to prescribe that medication, unless, in fact, it truly is the only thing that will be right for them and fits precisely with what they need.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have to take a break. Good point. We'll come back to Steve in California and with our other guest, John Camp, Richard Kravitz, Robert Center, and everybody else hanging on the line. Stay there with us. We have a little bit more to go on this segment on direct marketing, direct advertising to consumers of drugs. So what do you think? Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about direct advertising to consumers of drugs. Yeah, you've seen the kind of stuff you see on TV every evening in the evening news mostly. We're talking with John Camp, Richard Kravitz, Robert Centaur. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Susan in Kansas City. Hi, Susan. Are you there? Susan in Kansas City. Oh. Susan, no.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, okay, 2 points. One, I am a pharmaceutical rep, and one of the points that's important about consumer ads, and I do agree with a lot of the points that are made, and I appreciate this dialogue, is that when erectile dysfunction ads first came on, we heard countless stories from doctors about how men who hadn't been to the doctor in 20 years and probably would have never come in were brought into the doctor's office seeking this medication, and it led to some very interesting success stories for patients' health, where the doctor would do a physical exam to make sure the patient was in good health and found out the patient needed emergency bypass surgery and would be admitted within the week, where they may have died and not known that. And so sometimes the ads will actually bring patients in to see a doctor who normally wouldn't seek healthcare treatment at all. And in response to getting the pharmaceutical companies to fund public service ads, I think the way that you could solicit the most interest in funding that is that pharmaceutical companies lose a lot of money when patients don't comply with their medicines over time. And public service ads that explain to patients, you know, here's what, for instance, blood pressure or cholesterol does to you, and when your doctor prescribes the medicine, here's why it's important to stay on it and what types of things it's preventing, that would help in the long run, not only financially from the pharmaceutical company's end, but obviously from the patient's end. And it would also save doctors time in patient education as well.
Mm-hmm. Good points, Dr. Center. What do you say to those?
It's hard to respond to that. I certainly heard the stories about people at erectile dysfunction coming in and finally seeing a doctor. I think that wave is over with. I think that would have happened even without the television ads. As soon as the buzz got out on the street, I believe we would have heard that anyway. The idea about improving adherence to drugs, would television ads do that? And would the pharmaceutical industry invest in that because they would sell more prescriptions because people actually were taking their drugs? It's a really nice idea. I'm not a believer, but it's a really nice idea.
Well, there's an interesting example actually out there right now. There's Tropol XL ads, and I don't work for AstraZeneca, the company. I've just been watching this. They have a great ad now that's essentially a conversation with a doctor and a patient about compliance. I'm told that ad has improved compliance on that drug considerably.
What drug is that?
Tropol XL.
Okay, I guess I'll have to ask my doctor about that one.
I might have to ask mine.
It's a great ad. An older black doctor about my age who, with a raised eyebrow, tells me more about the importance of my taking that drug on a regular basis as prescribed than anything my doctors have ever said to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, Susan makes a good point. Why not just have an ad about, you know, a generic ad that says if you're on medications, make sure you take your drugs?
You know, that would be a follow doctor's orders. That would be a great ad. That would be a great thing for the American public. I mean,
I think that's actually something that the most physicians could get behind.
It's very wide swath, but Bob Center doesn't think it's going to happen, or it's pie in the sky.
I'm just skeptical about the pharmaceutical industry investing in true public service announcements. I hope they prove me wrong. I hope they can come back and say, you were wrong. But the ads that I see are mostly for the more expensive drugs, that have a small niche and they're trying to increase their market share.
Well, Bob,
and I understand why they're doing that. That's economics. But I don't think that's good for my patients or for the healthcare budget.
Well, I think in this case we have a case where the economics of drug sales actually turn out to provide a public service campaign at no cost to the public. If I'm seeing ads about drugs and disease states that I need to have treated, and think about some of the undertreated diseases in America, diabetes, one that I know very well, depression, the need to lower people's cholesterol, those are things, and for the most part, that are people don't know that they have them until they're treated. If advertising leads people to their doctors to learn about these disease states and they're treated appropriately, that's a very good thing.
Yeah, but I think the two things that, or the thing that Bob and I would probably agree on is that drug advertising in its current form, with its current focus on the kind of conditions that are actually advertised, is not succeeding in achieving those aims, or at least not with carrying along substantial harms in addition.
How much does all this advertising, of $4 billion of advertising, how much does that add to the cost of a pill that may already cost $10?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question that you raise. I'm not sure that the economics of advertising is that if you increase the use of a product and the sale of the product, the per product cost goes down. As you guys know as well as anyone, the primary cost of a drug is the R&D that goes into that drug. If with advertising you can increase the utilization of that drug over the very short patent-protected period, what you do is you decrease the cost of the R&D per pill.
Bob Santor?
You absolutely decrease the cost of the R&D per pill, but you don't decrease the cost of the drug to the consumer. They go up faster than the cost of living every single year, regardless of how many pills are being sold. And so I don't there are more drug profits because they spread out the cost of R&D, but that does not decrease the cost of the patient.
What we need to do on that is we need to decrease the cost of drug research. We need to get behind Dr. Van Eschenbach at the FDA and his Critical Path Initiative, who's recommending that we do things to speed the development of drugs so that we can do this better and for less money.
Doesn't that give us a Vioxx? Don't we wind up with Vioxx again?
We're not asking you for the Vioxx things happen. People have brake problems on their cars, but let's not assume that just because we do it right and well and efficiently that it's going to lead to more death. It's going to lead to more proper treatment of patients. It's going to save the lives of people in America.
Well, if the Vioxx problem had happened with 20,000 prescriptions instead of whatever there were, 200,000, which occurred as a result of promotion, we would have had a much smaller problem.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got the aspirin wouldn't be approved today because it causes abdominal bleeding. Do we want to take
a 2-year delay in promoting aspirin wouldn't have had, you know, wouldn't have brought one whit of harm to the American public health. It would have been a slight delay.
If we're mostly talking about new drug development, should we invest in new drug development? That's motherhood and apple pie. The problem is when you get a Me Too drug where the cost of development is not that great. You have not added a new class of drugs, and now you're trying to sell it on TV as being better than other drugs of its class. I find that objectionable as a physician and as a patient.
My physician tells me that the so-called Me Too drugs give him an opportunity to choose from among a larger number of drugs and enable him to better treat his patients.
But he doesn't need his patient coming and asking for it, does he?
Well, I don't know. The fact that a patient asks about a drug, we had the diabetic who told us that she had to ask her doctors about several innovations in the treatment of diabetes before she was told about them.
But you were saying that your doctor,
good questions get good answers.
Your doctor knew about the drug and was telling you about the range of drugs you had to choose from. All right, we're running out of time, and this is an important and interesting issue. I want to thank all of my guests, John Camp, Executive Director of the Coalition for Healthcare Communication, Richard Kravitz, Professor of Internal Medicine and Director of the Center for Health Services Research in Primary Care, University of California, Davis, Robert Center, Professor of Internal Medicine, University of Alabama School of Medicine in Birmingham. Thank you all for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.